It occurred to me the other day while I was sitting, pondering. People say, you know what? It's one of the more boring things about parenthood. It's one of the things you have to endure in parenthood. Now, some might say, well, teenagers. You got to endure teenagers for 5 years, 6 years, teenagers. You got to endure intrusive opinions from everybody and their brother and sister-in-law telling you how to run your kid's life and how to raise your kids. You got to endure arguments. Nah, you know, all that stuff, that's mundane compared to this one. This is one of the worst aspects of parenthood. Having to listen to a little kid's joke. Now think about this for a second. Dad. What? Knock, knock. Who's there? Mom. Mom who? Mom said I could come in. Okay, I got another one. Now, back in the old days, when children did not have fragile self-images, you could, as a parent, look and say, that's not very funny. That's kind of dumb. You could say that. There wasn't any expert floating around saying, well, you're messing your kid's self-image up. You got to drop what you're doing. Stop. Listen to this stupid joke. Dad, knock, knock. Who's there? Banana. Banana who? I like bananas. Now, every once in a while, they get sort of creative. I mean, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every so often. My son Peter, 7 years old, comes in. Dad, what does Geronimo say when he jumps out of a plane? What, Pete? Me! I say, Pete, did you make that up? Yeah. Now, that's not bad. Here's the problem. The shrinks, the expert types, the child development people, they all tell you got to drop what you're doing and listen to your kid's joke, okay? Because this is part of his development of his self-image. You got to listen to your kid's joke. And then you got to laugh to make him feel valuable. But you know the problem with laughing at a kid's joke. What do? Well, they just take this as a signal to tell you more. Dad, what? Why did the chicken cross the road? I don't know. Why did the chicken cross the road? Because there was other chickens on the other side. That's good, Sarah. That's real good. Why don't you go tell your mother that? Tell your mother all the other jokes you're making up, too. Call Grandma. Tell her. My mother has caller ID, so if she sees it's one of the kids, she knows it's going to be a joke, and she doesn't pick it up. I know it, because I'll call a minute before. I'll say, Mom, are you there? Yeah, okay, I just called, so you're okay. Okay, thanks, honey. And then I'll hang up, and then the kids will call Grandma a minute later, and she won't answer. She knows what's going on. They're going to tell her a joke. Wouldn't it be nice to have caller ID in your living room? Your kid comes in, and there's some kind of device on their forehead that says, joke is coming. You can pretend you're asleep. You can pretend you're reading. You can anything. Just and here's the worst times for kid jokes, ages 4 to 7 or 8. Isn't that right, Dan? I mean, you got kids. Dan's sitting across from me. He knows this. 4 to 8. Stupid kid jokes. That is the only thing that could rival that is listening to a kid when he's first learning how to read. If you can't sleep, tell your kid to go get his little primer, his little book, come over and sit down. Oxford, read this to me.
Okay.
The big dig dog. The big dog runs. The big dog runs. Fast. The big dog runs far. No, fast. It's close to as torturous as listening to a joke. Now, there are those of you out there who think I'm not being sensitive enough, thinking, you know, Dr. Akon, this is their world. This is who they are. This is how they get our attention. This is cute stuff. This is the stuff of kidhood. Dr. Ray, you're going to regret this when your kids are older and those teens come in there and tell you their jokes, and they're not the kind of jokes you want to hear because they heard it on a bus. Well, I understand. And I politely laugh. I don't ignore. I'm just simply saying, in all honesty, you gotta know. It's one of the more torturous aspects of parenthood. Children's jokes. Now, I've gotten emails from some of you who have been implied to Dr. Ray, yours are one of the more torturous aspects of radiohood. Well, I just have one thing to say to you. Maybe so, but I don't know. Dear Dr. Ray, this came from Chris. I was listening to your show yesterday. This was not yesterday. This was last week. See, this is a little bit of a time warp. The email came last week. You commented on how you thought priests may come from larger families than average. I did say that. I said I have absolutely no statistics on this. But my great hunch is that the larger families account for a disproportionate share of vocations of the priesthood. Dr. Ray, you are right. It's kind of redundant, isn't it? Dr. Ray, you are right. It's kind of redundant. You don't have to say that second part. A year or so ago, we were at an ordination celebration. Afterwards, a priest from Ohio commented on our large family size. Did you have one of your kids tell him a joke? He went on to say that he had done some research. That's interesting. I don't know what this research entails. I don't know how extensive it was. I don't know how well done it was. Was it anecdotal? And he found that 80% of the priests in the United States come from families with four or more children. Yeah, well, if that's true, that's quite incredible. I wish I had the stats to pass on to you, Dr. Ray, but I don't know where to find them. If I find some numbers on the net, I will pass them on to you. Chris. Thank you, Chris. I did a stat. I checked into this last week. I found that 100% of all the priests in the United States come from families with kids. Yeah, I checked into that for the most part.